This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Mike Canary. Thanks for joining us. Florida's first ever blue-green algae task force recently made its first round of recommendations that will be considered by lawmakers during the upcoming 2020 legislative session. The recommendations focus on source identification, nutrient reduction and remediation efforts, with guidance on innovative technologies that could help with the prevention, cleanup, and mitigation of harmful algal blooms. When it comes to health impacts, the task force consensus document said, quote, "Public health issues as they relate to blue-green algae blooms are an increasing concern in Florida, though the science bearing on those concerns is quite limited and not well developed. Of particular importance and urgent need are studies that address acute and chronic health effects of exposure of humans, wildlife, and domesticated animals to algal toxins," end quote. The document goes on to say that an essential component of such studies is access to quantitative data on algal toxins in water, sediments, and air, and that the task force recommends that regular and proactive sampling for algal toxins be incorporated strategically into existing and future water quality sampling and monitoring programs. One researcher who has worked extensively on the issue of prolonged exposure to the toxin BMAA that is produced by blue-green algae is Dr. Walter Bradley. He's professor and chairman emeritus in the Department of Neurology at the University of Miami School of Medicine and has been studying possible causes of neurodegenerative diseases like ALS and Alzheimer's for decades. His current research is trying to correlate where people who have developed ALS lived and what they would have been exposed to while living there in as detailed and broad a scope as possible to try to determine if there's a correlation between exposure to toxins produced by cyanobacteria and developing ALS or Alzheimer's. Dr. Bradley, welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
It's nice to talk to you, Mike.
If you'd like to weigh in on our conversation and engage with other listeners, you can do so on social media. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. On Twitter, we're at WGCU. Use the hashtag GCL. So, Dr. Bradley, have you followed the Blue-Green Algae Task Force and its recommendations, especially in terms of possible health implications or how to deal with that?
Yes, I've certainly looked at what they've written and recommend to the governor, yes.
What were your thoughts on their conclusion? It sounded like they were saying that there really isn't enough hard science and that we should do more data collection in terms of toxins to see if we can find a correlation.
Well, I thought that their recommendations with regard to the need of more research is correct. There's always the need for more research. I thought that they were a little under-recommending with regard to the health responses. I think they could and should have been more definitive with regard to the protection that should be recommended to the public.
The recommendations said that the science bearing on these concerns is quite limited and not well developed. How would you respond to that characterization of the science behind possible health implications of exposure to cyanobacteria toxins?
So the blue-green algae have acute toxins, and that's pretty well known and is pretty well reported. And the health authorities, I think, take a reasonably good approach to warning the public, although I think maybe not as much as ought to be taken, because there's certainly, animals are dying, fish are certainly dying from these blue-green algae blooms, and there ought to be much more activities taken to try to mitigate these blooms from the animal point of view. And certainly the humans are exposed to a certain degree of health risk from those acute toxins. I think that that's obvious. And the task force didn't really make as much as they could have made in terms of those effects. In terms of the long-term effects, I think that the task force was reticent to make what I think is a case that should be made for the protection of the public. I draw the analogy with smoking. Smoking was known to be harmful to the health for many years before finally it was shown to be a risk factor for cancer. Back in the 40s, people were beginning to talk about smoking as being a risk factor for lung disease and possibly for cancer. And yet the tobacco industry was still saying doctors recommend smoking Camel and Marlboro and so forth. And it wasn't until in the 60s that eventually Richard Bell and others proved that smoking caused lung cancer. And then we started to have the Surgeon General forcing tobacco companies to put warning labels on tobacco packs and so forth. There really should have been announcements before that time of the risks of smoking. And we're in that same situation with regard to blue-green algae blooms. There really ought to be a warning to people that there is a risk for long-term damage to liver and potentially long-term damage and risk of cancer and neurological disease from the exposure to these blue-green algae blooms. It is not proven, but it nevertheless is a possibility of risk, and therefore we ought to be taking maneuvers to prevent these algal blooms. And that's what should be the outcome of the science that is going into the looking at the toxins that are being produced by these algal blooms and looking at the health effects that are being seen in animals and the experimental studies that are being done on these toxins.
Can you talk a little bit about the research that you're participating in or leading, I'm not sure which, but that's assembling the databases, looking at genetic characteristics, environmental exposures, trying to paint some kind of broad picture of where blue-green algae is, who's living near it, and whether they're coming down with these neurodegenerative disorders?
Well, so these are a very complex and broad-based series of research studies. Blue-green algae produce a number of different toxins. I mean, a wide spectrum of different toxins. One of those toxins is a substance called BMAA. BMAA has been shown to be present in the cyanobacteria that were responsible for the outbreak of ALS and Parkinson's disease and Alzheimer's disease that occurred in Guam in the South Pacific after the end of the Second World War. From that discovery, BMAA has been applied in animal studies in monkeys and been shown to be toxic and to produce those same changes that occurred in the Guam natives in those monkeys if you feed it chronically to those monkeys. And it's also been shown in lower animals like fruit flies. The dolphins that swim in these blue-green algae blooms have, with colleagues here in South Florida, have also been shown to develop Alzheimer's-type changes in the brains. Have also been shown to accumulate DNA in their brains. So this is one area of research which links the toxins produced by cyanobacteria and the risk of developing neurological disease. Another line of research is that colleagues in Dartmouth, New Hampshire, have shown that there's an increased incidence of ALS around lakes that have cyanobacterial blooms in them. So that's another area of research that is suggesting that there is a risk of if you live near to areas with cyanobacterial blooms in them. Now, all of those things don't necessarily prove that cyanobacteria, these blue-green algae blooms, do cause these neurodegenerative diseases, but they certainly raise the flag of caution that ought to be causing the departments of health to warn people, stay away from these blooms, and should be causing the departments of that are responsible for trying to mitigate these algal blooms to be doing something to limit and reduce the frequency and the severity of these blooms.
If you're just joining the show today, I'm talking with Dr. Walter Bradley. He's professor and chairman emeritus in the Department of Neurology at the University of Miami School of Medicine. We're discussing his research into possible connections between exposure to toxins produced by blue-green algae and neurodegenerative disorders like ALS and Alzheimer's. This segment is not live, so we're not taking calls, but if you'd like to weigh in, find us on Facebook at WGCU Public Media and on Twitter at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. You know, I find it interesting that if you Google blue-green algae, Florida, news stories, you see a lot of talk of microcystin, which is one of the toxins, but you don't really see much about the BMAA. Can you suppose why that is? I mean, or I guess flesh out the difference between the two, but also just I hear you and Dr. Brand and Dr. Mash and people like that talking about BMAA, but I don't really hear that coming from anyone else.
Leaps in the water with this blue-green guacamole in the water and goes swimming through it and drinks some of it and then comes out of the water and dies in 4 to 6 hours. That's pretty obvious that there's nasty stuff in that water. And when the dog has an autopsy and you find microcystins in its body, and it's pretty obvious that it died of microcystin poisoning. Now, you won't know if the dog had been swimming around and 5 years later went down and died early from sort of dementia. I mean, you don't know the dog's died of dementia. This is the problem, that these late neurodegenerative diseases and this increased incidence of liver cancer and cirrhosis, these are things that happen years after exposure, and these are very much more difficult to tie down. It's only later research that shows that exposure many years earlier is what is responsible for these later occurrences. As I said, if you go back into the smoking history and lung cancer, it took many years of research to prove the association, and many thousands, hundreds of thousands of patients died before that association was finally shown. And that's what we're at risk of seeing here, that we may have hundreds of thousands and maybe millions of people die of a premature death from these neurodegenerative diseases before we finally get to be able to make this association proven. And that's my concern.
Do you feel like there's research underway either that you're a part of or not that might be within reach of finding something conclusive enough that health officials would respond in the same way that they did with, you know, cigarettes?
You remember how long it took for the health officials to respond to cigarettes? And I think we're seeing the same sort of pattern here. I think that's really is the difficulty. And you live on the Gulf Coast, and really there's beginning to be some evidence to tie red tide to a similar sort of risk with regard to long-term hazards from the toxins produced by red tide. So we are, and the organisms in red tide are not that dissimilar from the organisms of blue-green algae. So it's you may be in the end suffering from the same potential risk on the West Coast as we are on the East Coast here.
Do you have any timeline on when that big study with all the multifacets to it might have some data that you can produce, or are you still years out from that?
Well, I think you're talking about the gene-environment
yes.
interaction studies. I mean, we have the CDC have been very forthcoming in terms of research support to try to look at why some people go down with disease and from exposure to certain environmental toxins, and others don't, even though they're exposed to exactly the same toxins. Some people, for instance, let's look at cancer. Some people smoke all their lives, but smoke like chimneys, and they never get cancer. And other people, you know, smoke for 5 years, and boy, they go down and get lung cancer and die of it. There has to be individual susceptibility to individual environmental toxins. And the CDC have given us and others grants to look for the genetics of individuals who have these diseases and try and link up the associations. And we have a three-year grant, it's called 3 years grant, and we're trying to look at the genetics of these people. We've got gene samples, and we're applying highly complex computer testing to those genes and to the environmental exposures of these people. I think we'll be very lucky if we get any hits within those 3 years to actually be able to come up with very much in the way of answers. These are long-term studies, Mike, and unfortunately, it's going to take a large amount of this sort of research to really come up with the answers. As you know, cancer's been there's been a battle against cancer for three and more decades, and some cancers have been cured, but the answers to some cancers have been found, but not all by any means. I think we're in the same situation here with the environmental factors for neurodegenerative diseases. But I think we're making progress, and but I think while we're making that progress, we ought to be doing common sense things about these algorithms.
You know, for somebody who's worked with ALS and also then the blue-green algae stuff for a very long time, what's it like for you as a researcher to suddenly be in a Florida where we have a proactive blue-green algae task force that's at least working toward trying to understand this in a way that might do, you know, make public policy changes?
Well, it's good to see. I mean, it's better than the last administration who would not allow the use of the words like climate change and other things of that nature in official publications and pronouncements and things like this. At least there's a forward-looking in terms of this and a forward use of state funds and so forth. It's better than the opposite. So I'm encouraged by that. But I think we need money behind it, and we need more proactive steps taken to actually start ameliorating these blooms.
All right. Well, that is all the time we have for this part of the show. I want to thank my guest. Dr. Walter Bradley is professor and chairman emeritus in the Department of Neurology at the University of Miami School of Medicine. Dr. Bradley, thanks for your time.
Mike, thank you.